All right, let's do this. We're going live in 5, 4, 3.
Oh my, just so many business podcasts out there. How can I possibly know where to begin? Here at Intrepid Business, we are about stripping away all of the usual boring fluff and instead focus on showcasing real people doing real business, achieving amazing things. The ones truly changing the world, the instigators making a dent, the people changing how we do sales and marketing, leading innovation, the people redefining leadership. But who are these people? Why do they do what they do? How do they do what they do? Find out on Intrepid Business. And now, here are your hosts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Intrepid Manufacturing, Intrepid Makers. I am your host, Todd Schnick. This is going to be a fun conversation. If you've been listening to me over the last, gosh, I want to say 3, 4, 5 years, I've talked a lot about today's main theme. It's changing the way we look at business, changing the way manufacturing operates, changing the way we look at makers and all that that implies. And it has far-reaching potential that we still haven't fully grasped and got our heads around. Going to be a really fun conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm joined today by John Hornick. He's a partner with the Finnegan IP Law Firm. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me today.
It's my pleasure. I appreciate you carving out some time to join me. We're changing the world, or I suspect certainly Finnegan's changing the world, so I'm grateful for you carving out a few minutes to join us. John, before we get into our important conversation, take a few quick secs. Tell us a bit about you and your background.
Well, I'm a partner, like you said, with the Finnegan Intellectual Property Law Firm. We're one of the largest intellectual property firms in the world. And you know, for people who don't know what that is, it's a patent law, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. And we do litigation and we protect our clients' IP portfolios. I've been with the firm for almost 35 years now and been a partner for about 25, I think. And I have a very broad practice. I do all types of intellectual property law. And more years ago now, I started getting very deeply involved in this 3D printing field. And that's kind of taken over my life for the past few years.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. And I appreciate you taking a sec to kind of walk us through what IP law is all about. It's possible that a lot of people listening to this don't, they may think they understand what that's about, but they probably really don't. And I'm saying that because I really don't. It's a critical space that you're in. And in light of what we're talking about, this is the whole 3D printing field and all that that means. Frankly, it can't proceed, it can't achieve, it can't do what we think and what we believe it can change and how it's going to change the world without understanding the implications of IP law. So, gosh, maybe I want to ask you to expand on that a little bit. So I can, in this day and age, anybody out there who's willing to spend the money can buy a 3D printer. But the implications of what IP law has to do with this is profound and game-changing and very impactful, obviously, on the space. So if you don't mind, John, take a few quick seconds and just remind all of us, give us a quick refresher of what this the IP side of this, or how this all impacts what we're about to talk about.
Sure. Well, you know, a 3D printer has this unique ability to be able to make a complete part or a complete product with one machine. And traditionally, we've needed a lot of machines with a lot of different operators to be able to make parts. 3D printers can make parts with one machine in one build. And the interesting thing about that is that it does what we call democratized manufacturing, meaning that practically anybody can start to manufacture products. Now, the analogy I draw to IP law is when you look at the time when we all started to realize how easy it was to download music digitally from the internet. At that time, that put the music industry under a lot of pressure because musics were protected by copyright, and traditionally the music industry used those copyrights to enforce their rights. If they found somebody making illegal copies of music, they'd say they were violating the copyrights, they might sue them. But then there got to be so much of that that the copyrights weren't really being effective anymore, and so what the music industry did is it stopped suing people and it shifted its enforcement over to only to real, you know, egregious counterfeiters. And instead, they came up with a different business model, like iTunes, for example. It makes it easy enough and cheap enough that you might be more likely to hopefully buy the music rather than steal it. Now, that's just music and that's just copyright. But when you look at 3D printing has the same ability to do that type of thing with all types of products and all types of technology, not just music, but all types of products and all types of intellectual property. So we can have situations where we have far more people who are making things than we have today. And when you have more people making things, then you're going to have more opportunities for making them improperly, making them illegally, making them in an infringing manner. And so the intellectual property infringement problems can multiply.
Yeah, well, that's John, you and I could talk for 3 hours just on that subject alone. I mean, and that's what's so exciting about what's possible with 3D printing. I mean, I guess it's, I'm going to assume half the people listening to this conversation are very well aware of what's possible with 3D printing. The other half are probably saying, boy, I've read something here or there, and I have some sense of what's possible. I mean, but what I'm thinking of when I think of, maybe I'll set this as a context, is that let's say I own some 1967 Austin Healey automobile, and it's struggling, and so I could download some plans, and I could have a carburetor specifically designed to run a car of that vintage. I could download it, print it, and then install it and shoot, then my car's working. But more importantly, I'm envisioning a future where if my liver's failing and I can have a liver printed that some doctor could install into my body, and all of a sudden I'm living for the next 25 years. I mean, so there's obviously amazing possibilities here. I don't know that I think it's fair to say that most people out there don't fully even comprehend how game changing this really potentially could be. Then going back to your conversation around IP and all that, then begins to say, wow, if some guy in some garage in Timbuktu is printing livers, well, that's where that becomes really, really serious. What you're in essence saying, and your whole message is idea of this leads to a manufacturing renaissance. And you could define that a million different ways, and it becomes a possibility where America becomes the manufacturing leader again. Talk about this whole Renaissance idea and what's actually really possible here.
Sure. Well, you know, go back to what I said before about the fact that you have one machine that can make a part or a product instead of having 10 or 12 machines. Well, when you have 10 or 12 machines, you've got 10 or 12 operators, and if they're in a country where labor costs are high, then it makes it really expensive to manufacture the product. So that's why we have manufacturing in far-off lands where labor is cheap. But if you have one machine that can make the part or the product, then you have a far less labor that's involved, and that enables you to bring the manufacturing back to countries that have high labor costs. And also, 3D printing kind of lends itself to small production runs, to customized products, to highly complex products. And those things together kind of lead to a situation where products are made closer to where they're needed. So instead of making things all the way across the world and then shipping them, you know, to the United States where they're used, we're more likely to have a lot of small factories, small companies that are making things closer to where they're needed. And there could be thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of these little factories all over the world. So 3D printing kind of tends towards small factories rather than large factories and making things closer to where they're needed.
Yeah, and thinking about that as you say it, John, is it's really exciting that some guy in his garage could really have an impactful change on the world and help people in a profound way. As we record this, it's early 2016, and there's a lot of political conversation around jobs and how to create jobs and specialized jobs and all that. What's your take on what 3D printing is going to do for this whole conversation around the need for unskilled workers and the need for skilled workers? I mean, how is this going to impact that whole conversation?
Well, you know, I think that in general, putting aside 3D printing, I think there are going to be fewer jobs for unskilled workers as time goes on. And a great example of that is that during the Great Recession, the unemployment rate in the United States was around 9 or 10% for the general population. But for people who had college education, bachelor or greater, the unemployment rate was only 4 to 5%. So I think in general we're going to have fewer jobs for unskilled people going forward. But that's the, I think that's especially true when you look at 3D printing, because 3D printing is a, you know, it involves high-tech machines. You don't necessarily have to have a college education to run one, but you have to have some training. So you can have some skills training, some vocational training, and that makes you qualified. And so I think that we'll have jobs for people who are skilled to use the machines going forward. And but, you know, what those jobs are will be, it's a little bit difficult to predict. There's already a lot of startups in this space, you know, companies that are finding a niche somehow in 3D printing. I mentioned those small factories. There are already hundreds of those in the United States where 3D printers are being used to make parts for companies. There, some of them are existing machine shops that have put in 3D printers. Others are startups that have only 3D printers. But, you know, the analogy I make to jobs is to think about the horse. You know, when the horse was the major form of transportation, we had all kinds of horse-related jobs. And then when the automobile came along, all of those jobs were lost. But think of all the jobs that were created by the automobile industry that nobody could have even conceived of when we were riding around on horses. I think the same thing will happen with 3D printing. We'll have all kinds of new businesses, new business models, new jobs that are created by this technology and by the industry that will grow up around it. But we may not necessarily be able to predict exactly what they are right now. So we'll lose some types of jobs and we'll gain other types of jobs.
Well, and that's the exciting part about this, right? I mean, see, well, I was going to say you and I, but I want to say me. I couldn't sit there and say, here's the 20 potential opportunities with 3D printing and how that's going to change. And what you and the conversation that you and I, if we were to have the same conversation 5 years from now, would be so radically different than what we can have now just based on our knowledge and understanding of what's possible today versus what will be possible 5 years from now. That's the point you're making, is that there were people that were writing editorials in the New York Times in the early 1900s saying, woe be us for getting rid of horses and carriages, because what an abomination that is. And but now we look back now and we can list the thousands of things that are possible because of the automobile. And even the automobile to this day is still changing. I mean, we're talking about self-driving cars and what's possible. This thing will never end, right? That's the exciting part of this thing, is that imagine, I mean, you and I can sit there. I mean, you and I have enough knowledge of what 3D printing is capable of now, what it's going to be capable of in a few years, to sit there and drool at the opportunity of, wow, imagine what we're going to talk about in a couple of years. But then to say, imagine what we can talk about with this, with regards to this in 10, 15 years' time, it's almost unimaginable. All right, John Hornick and I will return after this short break. We'll be right back.
This is Wes Moss, former host of Atlanta Tech Edge on NBC in Atlanta. I'm here today, though, to talk to you about my new digital financial advisory firm, Wella. Wella is an old English word that means wealth. Several years ago, my team realized there were too many people who needed help with their financial strategy, but couldn't get the help they needed because they didn't reach the high investment minimums of many financial advisory firms. To answer this need, we developed Wella, a digital platform that allows us to help people just like you get free financial advice and tools to better manage their finances. We also offer online investing and the ability to work with your own investment advisor with no minimums. Learn more at yourwella.com. That's YOURWELA.com.
All right, I am back with John Hornick, a partner with the Finnegan IP Law Firm, and frankly, the author of a new book called 3D Printing Will Rock the World. Now, John, no surprise, what we've been talking about so far has certainly been covered in your book, but tell me more about this book. What are some other areas of focus that we ought to be aware of with this new book?
Well, you know, the book starts out describing what the technology is. A lot of people, when they hear about 3D printers, they think of the machines they've probably seen that print out things like Yoda heads. And,
right,
of course, that's one type of 3D printing. But there are, you know, 3D printing is really kind of an umbrella term for different types of technology. And so the book starts off by talking about what those basically seven types of technology are, talks about, you know, materials that are used in the space. Then I spend a lot of time, a couple of chapters actually, talking about design, because traditionally products had to be designed for whether they could be made or not. You know, you had to look at what the manufacturing processes were that were available, and then you would design a product or a part so that you could make it. with 3D printing, you don't have any of those limitations. So this can have profound effects on the design, not just for designers, but for parts and products. In time, we'll start to see things that look fundamentally different from the parts that we've known in the past. And I've got some great examples of that, photos of those things in the book. I also have chapters talking about the things we were talking about earlier, how it will generate jobs. I give some predictions of the types of jobs it will create and how that might affect countries like ours that have high manufacturing costs. And then I talk about how 3D printing can take us back to being makers. You know, I think humans by nature like to make things. We're all makers at heart. And for most of human existence, we made the things that we needed. We didn't buy them. But when the Industrial Revolution came along, we started buying things rather than making them. And 3D printers have the ability to kind of take us back to being makers again. And I also cover in there how 3D printing might be used, the dark side, the criminal side of it. Then I end the book talking about the future and how kids are really kind of the key. And they're going to grow up with this technology, and the technology is going to grow up with the kids. And together, they're going to 3D print our future.
Well, walk me through why creating a new generation of makers matters. It's funny you say that, because just this morning, I was reading an article about Nikola Tesla and his rivalry with Edison, and how the two of them were so competitive in that late 1800s, early 1900s, and how what the two of them, what they did, how we're still today impacted by the work that they did. And I fear that most people listening to this don't even understand who in the hell the two of them were and how impactful they were. But there's been generations of makers and how they're tinkering and their experimentation, how it impacts us on a daily basis, and what the whole realm that 3D printing opens up with regards to, quote, makers, as you said, can change everything in ways that, frankly, we can't even pretend to understand as we speak today. So walk me through, understand why creating a whole new realm of makers and arming them with tools that most of us can't even comprehend the impact that's going to have, how that potentially could change everything.
Well, you know, I don't want to say that we're going to become makers, because I think we're already makers. You know, people who are woodworkers, they're makers. People who like to cook, they're makers. They're making things.
Yeah.
Electricians are makers. You know, bakers, they're makers. So we have a lot of makers out there already.
No, that's well said.
3D printing has the ability to allow us to make the things that we need, to allow more people to make the things that we need. And also, there's kind of a movement of people who view themselves as makers. And one of the great things about them is that they like the idea of open innovation. In other words, they like to share their ideas and they collaborate. And, you know, great things can come out of that. When you get some people together who are like-minded, they have an interest in developing different types of new ideas. And then you add 3D printers to that mix so that they not only are generating ideas, but they can actually use those machines to make quick prototypes of whatever it is that they are designing. And then, you know, the first prototype, that's not going to be great. So you can tweak it, and then you can print out the next prototype pretty quickly. And so, you know, you have an iterative process there that can be much, much faster than you've ever been able to do in the past, because you're able to get some tangible results pretty quickly.
Yeah, let's go back to the jobs that are possible here. If you listen to my silly, goofy example at the top of the show when I said, hey, I could make a carburetor for a 1967 Austin Healey, or I could more impactfully create a liver for someone who needs a liver transplant, I want to be sure that people listening don't think, oh, well, hey, I could go down, if I'm willing to spend $1,000, I can buy a 3D printer and produce a liver. No, it's not that simple.
No.
I mean, talk about the job opportunities and the potential here, because someone has to actually make these 3D printers themselves. They have to create the material that goes into them themselves. They have to create the printers themselves. They have to write the software that actually creates the stuff. I mean, there's a whole bunch more to it. I mean, it's one thing to print a plastic molded copy of a 67 Healey carburetor versus one that actually works. I mean, talk about what's possible with the jobs that can be created here to make all this actually possible and real.
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, everything that you mentioned is a job. Making the printers is a job. Writing software to run the printers and to make sure that they put out quality parts, those are all jobs. Creating the materials that go into the machines, those are jobs. So everything associated with it is a job creator. But there are plenty of other things that can come out of that as well. But, you know, I think one thing people have to understand is that there's really two sides to this 3D printing industry. There's a consumer side and there's an industrial side. And the consumer side, it kind of arbitrarily, we say that any printer that costs less than $5,000 is a consumer printer. And then on the industrial side, any printer that costs more than $5,000 is industrial. And the prices of those industrial machines go up to about $5 million.
Mm.
So if you look at the industrial side of this, those machines can make that carburetor that you're talking about, and they can make it out of metal. In fact, Jay Leno was famous for having a 3D printer and using 3D printers to make parts for his car collection. Everybody knows he has this big car collection.
Right.
So it's already possible to do that kind of thing. There are a couple of universities in Australia and a national lab in Australia called CSIRO that together they 3D printed an entire jet engine just a little over a year ago. So it's already possible to do incredible things on the industrial side. On the consumer side, machines don't cost as much. They're not as capable. But what they're great for is they're great for taking a design and turning it into something tangible and tweaking that design until you have exactly what you want. And then you can use the industrial machines to produce those parts. Or you can use traditional manufacturing too. But you know, those consumer machines, they're really great for designing and to some extent making finished parts, but mostly for designing and
prototyping. Well, it's more for modeling, right? I mean, I've interviewed plenty of people who, like architects, who have created a really very detailed model of a campus, industrial campus or a residential community that they're going to build. And this is what they can present to. There's plenty of stories and movies and television where you see architects create these balsa wood models of these communities that they're going to build. Now you 3D print that and you walk that up to an investor who says, "Oh, I want to build that," and then they invest money. And then your point is, and then that goes to a whole nother level of industrial capability where you can actually really produce this stuff. I get what you're saying, and that makes all kinds of sense. So let me ask you this question. Let's look ahead a little bit. So someone listening to this, let's say they're 15, 16 years old, and at this moment, they're thinking a career in manufacturing, ugh, I don't want that. That's boring. There's no opportunity there. Those guys are getting laid off. They have to wear overalls, and they get dirty, and they have this... They have to follow these strict labor rules and all that kind of thing. I think the point we're making here, if you're reading between the lines, is that a career in manufacturing potentially from here on out is extraordinarily intoxicating, and that it is so exciting about what's possible because you are going to change the world forever by what we can do now, and more importantly, what's possible down the road a bit, right?
Yeah, well, here's the difference between old manufacturing and manufacturing 3D printing. In old manufacturing, you worked one machine, you did one little thing to a part that came down the assembly line past you, and you just did that. And that was boring. That was repetitive. With 3D printing, as the operator of a 3D printer, you could be making the entire part or the entire product, whatever it happens to be. So you see it from beginning to end. And you can be much more responsible for it, and you're much more involved in the process. And there's a shortage of people, you know, we talk about jobs and needing jobs, but there's a shortage of people who are qualified to use these machines. There are shortages of people who are qualified to design for 3D printing. So, you know, some people actually, there have been some studies done, and those studies are saying that this technology is drawing people back into manufacturing again. It's drawing them into design for 3D printing. So I think it's very exciting, and we're starting to see more and more educational programs in not just in high schools, but in elementary schools involving 3D printing. We're starting to see a whole lot more 3D printers in the classroom, and colleges are starting to get into the act as well, and developing curriculums for 3D printing. But what I think we do need, though, is I think we need more trade schools who are just teaching people how to use the machines effectively. So you don't necessarily have to get college education. That's not for everybody. But we need more programs so people can get trained to use the machines because the jobs are out there and they're not getting filled.
Mm. Well, just to repeat what John was saying, there is so much opportunity with regards to what 3D printing can do and what it will be able to ultimately do in terms of where we need to bring in people, young people who are intrigued by a career in technology. Boy, you have no idea what's possible here. And it's so exciting. And as John said, so much opportunity there from virtually every aspect of it. Very, very exciting. Well, John, this is one of those conversations that, frankly, we could talk for hours and hours about all the possibilities, all the ramifications, but unfortunately, it's a short podcast. Maybe we'll have to have you back on to continue this dialogue as we continue to grow our understanding of what's possible here. For now, unfortunately, how can people contact you? Should they have questions? Where can they learn more about the work of Finnegan IP Law? And most importantly, where can they get their hands on a copy of your book, 3D Printing Will Rock the World?
Well, the book, 3D Printing Rock the World, that is available on Amazon on either paper or Kindle. I also have a website, which is www.3dprintingwillrocktheworld. You can get the book through the website. I've also written a lot of articles on this topic. You can find those on there. You can find other books on 3D printing on my website. And my law firm is Finnegan, so we're at www.finnegan.com, and we're about 300 lawyers with offices all over the world. And, you know, I'd be happy to try to answer questions that people might have.
John Hornick, a partner with Finnegan IP Law and the author of the book, 3D Printing Will Rock the World. John, real pleasure for this quick taste of what's possible with 3D printing. We may have to have you back on the show to continue this dialogue. Lots of exciting opportunity there. Appreciate you making time to join us.
Thanks. It was my pleasure.
The pleasure.
Have a great day.
You too. The pleasure was mine. John Hornick, again, partner with Finnegan IP Law and the author of 3D Printing Will Rock the World. All right. All the time we have for today. Again, on behalf of my guest, John Hornick, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on Intrepid Makers.